Well, welcome back, everyone, for another episode of Reimagining Cyber. Rob and Stan here. Stan, you're just fresh back from a overseas trip. You want to share a little bit more on where you've been, what you did?
Yeah, I had an opportunity to go to Spain. I was in Madrid for the week. I have to admit, didn't see much of Madrid. It's like we could have been in any office building in the world. I spent most of the time there, but we did enjoy some fantastic food. I have to admit, one of the things that I failed on my return trip is realizing that when I flew from Madrid to JFK, my connecting flight back home was not out of JFK. I was going through security and I, you know, was going to the connecting flight area and I was asked by this nice lady to see my boarding pass or where am I going? I said, I'm going to Richmond. And they said, well, can I see your boarding pass? Yes, sir. We don't have any flights to Richmond. You have to go to LaGuardia. And I was like, you've got to be kidding. So yeah. I had to get a taxi. Fortunately, I had plenty of time, but it was one of those things like making a long day longer by switching airports to get your connecting leg. So only in New York, right? But anyway, it was a great trip. I enjoyed getting paella again, and I discovered fried anchovies are something I like.
Really?
That was a nice appetizer.
Yeah.
And so it was a good trip.
I got to say, paella is my favorite dish. Now that you threw in that fried anchovies, that was a wrinkle. I hadn't kind of heard that before. Interesting. I'll have to give that a whirl as well. But your New York adventure amazes me because I don't know how you missed that first off. But then when you told me that, I was like, really? You did? Really? You know, here's
really,
the fun of
really
connecting back through TSA. So
pretty sad, isn't it? Pretty sad.
Great stuff. Hey, let's jump in though. Let's talk about this week's episode. And it has been a crazy start to the new year with many different massive types of cyber attacks occurring. And maybe we can kind of kick off the first one, Stan. I'll hand it over to you for that.
Yeah. So first up is being coined the mother of all breaches of MOAB. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an event that really has sort of like shocked the world as far as just the size and scope. A staggering 26 billion records were dropped. And some of these records might be duplicates, right? Mm-hmm. But the scale of the leak is unprecedented. And it was organized by, you know, folders, and it had the results of breach impacted folks like Twitter or X and LinkedIn and Adobe and Dropbox. But it also had, you know, government agencies like from the US and Brazil and Germany and Philippines and Turkey and other countries. And it was more than just credentials, but also included, you know, sensitive data that holds substantial value for malicious actors. And so this combination of data dropped at one time and organized in a way which malicious actors can then take advantage of it is kind of unprecedented. And the potential misuse is enormous. And so it is a wake-up call, I think, for data security and privacy folks as far as the ramifications of these type of breaches.
I agree. I mean, it is just a massive amount of data that they put out there. I think it's as they've pulled it all together, as you stated, from the different organizations, it's just crazy to think about, right? But I think it's people need to understand that this goes back to, you know, realizing, there's a set of credentials that are out there that they're going to be able to pull through and include as part of that data. But it is, to the point you just made, it's the additional sensitive information that's also part of what they've been able to capture. So it's important, right, for people.
If you think about how you could leverage this trunk load of data and, you know, feed it into a large language model AI and use that to be able to even connect the dots further between these different breaches, I think, again, the ability then to act on it is going to be a lot easier for these malicious actors.
Yeah, it will indeed, because you think about, we've discussed the topic, obviously, around AI and cybersecurity over this past year quite a bit. This is an example, as you're calling out, that they could be easily building up this information repository back into the LLMs to be able to take advantage of for future attacks, for selling the data back into other organizations and other people that are trying to be, you know, malicious.
So our listeners, whether you be part of organizations and you're part of the securing those organizations, or individuals, be on your guard for identity theft and other attempts at leveraging this information for phishing attacks.
Yep. And I also kind of add to that, go in and make sure you're changing your passwords. Like, just, you know, make it a habit. because this is what happens, is a lot of repurposing of those credentials. And then also take advantage of multi-factor authentication, right? It's the simplest, we talked about in the past, thing that you can do for yourself. And many of the different services and organizations you work with to access information has the option to allow you to turn that feature on as well. And the other thing that's going on right now over this past month is what we've seen with Midnight Blizzard, right? A notorious Russian-backed group that has been involved, and as you've heard maybe in the past, as Cozy Bear, as APT29, you would know them.
These are the same guys that did the SolarWinds attack.
You would know them from 2020. That's right, from the SolarWinds attack. So they're back at it, and this time, you know, they had Microsoft and other organizations such as HPE in their sites. And so the biggest one that you've seen information on at this stage that's been released is around what they've done and being able to get into Microsoft. And their way in essence, was through simple password spraying with brute force attack to get in and target some accounts. They were able to get into a legacy test non-production account. Mm-hmm. So keywords, legacy and test, an old account and within a test bad environment. So two things, again, better hygiene, need to pay attention to those things. But they were able to crack into that account. And in doing so, then at that point, they were able to go ahead and create some OAuth applications to be able to take advantage of. Basically, from an OAuth perspective, it's being able to leverage a way of communicating through an application to authenticate to other applications.
So they actually created malicious OAuth applications in the environment and then used those
to get into
their attack.
Correct. And the attack then was actually gone into the Office 365 Exchange environment, right? So Exchange, again, is the Microsoft, in essence, mail services, all we know about when we log in from an OWA or Outlook web-based access environment, outlook.com. Think of it that way, right? When you're getting into that, what are you getting into? You're getting into the mailboxes. And so now they had full reins into those mailboxes and were very targeted in who they were actually going in to look at emails of. They targeted specific executives. They targeted the cybersecurity teams members. And they also targeted the legal team members. So why, right? Because what it gave them was intelligence on what Microsoft already had on them. As a threat actor. What else maybe they were seeing that they were doing and planning, right? So again, kind of how were they coming in with whatever threat intelligence they had, they being Microsoft, on the Midnight Blizzard attack gang? Or what else were they actually going to be potentially doing as part of some of the capabilities they were trying to, you know, in essence, put in place for themselves.
So do you categorize this as a state-sponsored kind of threat actor?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Midnight Blizzard, we know, right? They are state-sponsored, right, by Russia. And so, again, going back to that SolarWinds attack, it was attributed back to the same gang, right? And I absolutely do. So we got to be aware of, you know, what could this be? So then what came out was, I think it was around the November timeframe when Microsoft started picking up on some, you know, activity that seemed suspicious. HPE then came out and said, hey, we've seen some stuff back in May of last year, 2023. They haven't disclosed more information, but there's other organizations we know are going to be tied into similar type of attack sequences that they've taken in to gather information, gather additional intel, and be more targeted in their approach going forward. So, and by the way, Stan, this is the same group that was also involved in past election misinformation.
And guess what year it is, right?
Exactly.
Well, speaking of nation state actors, I mean, one of the things that continues to go on, but I think it's increased significantly, is the cyber war activity between Russia and Ukraine. You know, these activities increased and, you know, Ukraine honestly is preparing for even a new phase of cyber warfare. There are experts from Google's threat analysis group and Recorded Future, both of which are threat intel firms, that are warning of an increase in disruptive and destructive kind of attacks from Russia, particularly as the war shifts into potentially Ukraine's favor. The cyber forces in Russia are very adept. Midnight Blizzard has other names like Cozy Bear and APT29, but you know, they have other teams as well that are focused on Ukraine specifically. And an example of this was back in the 25th of January, where Ukraine's e-services from a major provider were disabled. And this provider aids in the civil volunteers at the border crossings, and other online services for the postal operators were disrupted. And so they faced numerous cyber incidents that originated, most of which from Russia. And so, you know, they've had throughout the war and even before the conflict impact to their utility companies and our operators, as well as online banking. But, you know, it goes both ways. I mean, Ukrainian hackers are also targeting Russia infrastructure and databases. And Rob, I don't know if you saw this one because it just came out this last weekend, but Ukraine has also engaged with, it looks like a research center called Planeta, that they wiped out apparently 2 petabytes of crucial data for that organization.
I did not see
that. So again, it's one of those things where these kind of destructive attacks where you're wiping out the data that support, in this case, they have supercomputers, that the data, which is used for meteorological and satellite data and other things for state agencies in Russia, they may not be able to recover from that. The size of the data, they may not have had the backups to actually be able to recover and then be able to continue to operate and provide the services within to the Russian agencies that they were previously. You know, the estimated loss on this is in the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, it could be difficult for Russia to be able to substitute what was being done by this agency or this research center. So again, I think it just underscores the new era we're in as far as warfare, that mm-hmm. it's not only kinetic, but it's also cyber.
Yeah.
And the fact that these type of destructive attacks could bleed into other targets outside of the two main combatants and impact allies, we just have to be cognizant that it may not be just a data grab, like we've talked about with the mother of all breaches right at the beginning.
Yeah.
It may be we want the data, but then we're going to wipe out your servers in the process.
Right. Right. And you know, that potential reach to other nations and negative impacts is one that's difficult at times to tie attribution back into, right? So it's got to be very much understood what's happened and where it's coming from and the reality of it.
And we're only in January, man.
We're only in January. The other thing I think that's interesting about what you were just discussing is how effectively Ukraine is actually using AI as part of their war capabilities. And so there's been a lot of, you know, things that they've been doing with facial recognition to help them, of course, but even some learnings that came out last week, and I haven't gotten the details on it, but that I want to go dig into around how they're tying into their cyber capabilities. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what those lessons are, because they are kind of being watched for that. And in some cases being supported, of course, to help as much as possible. You're absolutely right. We're 1 month in, and look at what's right. happened and what's going to, you know, happen going forward with leveraging some of the data from the mother of all breaches. Who else is impacted by what Midnight Blizzard actually has done in some very large technology environments that, you know, typically would expect some very solid security capabilities of. But again, anyone can be breached.
And going back to that one, Midnight Blizzard, the fact that it started with just a brute force attack. I mean, it's one of those things where it's nothing sophisticated.
Hygiene, right?
Right.
Hygiene, legacy, test, account. Like, you got to be aware of what those things are that are still lingering out there and the avenue they can be used for to jump into the corporate environment.
And I think, again, if you look at mitigation approaches on that one, if you had identity governance and awareness of what accounts perhaps are not being managed properly, mm-hmm. you know, they use that account most likely for testing if not, years ago, potentially
exactly.
for something, but
right.
they didn't necessarily have an awareness that it was still lingering, mm-hmm. you know, and identity governance gives you the opportunity to get that view of what is actually in being used by users or service accounts or, you know, and being able to actually shut things down when they're not actually being used anymore in a timely
that's right.
manner.
That's
so
right.
again, that's sort of like, again, that technical debt, you need to have that visibility to be able to take action on it.
Exactly. Great example. Well, Stan, we'll see what comes over the course of the next month or two. Hopefully things start slowing down a little bit, but I don't think that's the case at all. Right.
So hopefully we'll have another episode dedicated to attacks in February. Right. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. All right, Stan, great conversation. And until the next time.
All right. Take care.
Hello, producer Ben here, and Stan and Rob referred to the SolarWinds security breach just now, one of the worst cyber espionage incidents ever suffered by the US. Reimagining Cyber had an immediate take on the whole situation back in episode 4 of the podcast. It's well worth going back to take a listen and getting a flavour of the mood at the time. It featured John Pescatore, director of emerging technology at SANS in Washington, D.C.
We don't know that they're only doing intelligence. That's an assumption that's based on forensics looks of some of what was going on. The possibility that two things. One is that in the SolarWinds attack, there were other malicious payloads and beachheads left behind. The second thing is, I really doubt they were only looking at SolarWinds.
That was John Pescatore. Now, we've included a link to that episode in the show notes, as well as links giving more details on some of the attacks mentioned over the last few minutes. If you haven't done so already, please do leave us a rating and review. I appreciate that not all podcast apps let you do that, but if yours does, what are you waiting for? Thanks for listening to the Reimagining Cyber podcast. Goodbye.